Michelle White Dove, when did you find out that you were psychic?
I've always known. I was born this way. But when you're very young, my family was not religious or spiritual. They just thought I was a very unusual child. And, you know, when you're a little girl, I just made the assumption, which we should never assume, that everyone else was seeing and you know, hearing and feeling and smelling and tasting, because my gifts are diverse across the board, only to find out that when I would open up my mouth in front of certain people and say certain things, that I found that I get myself in a whole lot of trouble. So around the age of 8, I said, wait a minute, I need to, like, just shut my mouth and, you know, there's a time and a place for it. So I really kind of, to be honest with you, at that around that age, because it was so unaccepted, especially here in the States, you know, they thought, oh, this, my mother used to say, why is she walking down to the cow pasture at such a small age, and the first one on the bus to go to church and the last one off to different churches? This was when I was very small, because I wanted to be close to God or people that were close to God. And you and I both know, or you guys know, that we don't have to be in church to be close to God. It's always there. So that served its platform or purpose for me, but I don't believe in, like, you know, segregation and judgment. That's what I love about God, equal opportunity. We're supposed to be working together. But it was around the age of 8, and then I said, everybody's not doing what I'm doing. Yes, I am unusual. And I really just took my guidance from God and the angel kingdom, because they always put me right where I needed to be, out of harm's way. And I found that, because I did not have guidance, getting a bit personal here, or family, that God and my support team was my best friends and my guidance. And only when I didn't listen did I find myself to be, you know, in some type of trouble or in a situation that I could have changed by listening. But what really turned things around for me is I kind of suppressed my gifts. Like, I kept them to myself in one sense. Obviously, if there was something for the family or something, it would just come out. I used to have a beauty salon, believe it or not, and I still did this. I've always been like this, like I said, but they were coming to get their hair done or nails. Some of those people would come in and run out, never come back again, because I would hold their hands and the information that would come out, and then some came back just to keep getting information. I'm jumping ahead, though, because at the age of 18, I actually had a near-death experience. I had a fatal car collision with my cousins and friends, and that was a very important day, because I knew not to get in the car. My cousin, who was my first cousin, I was very close to Joey. He was 15. He had 2 types of leukemia. So the family wasn't spiritual or religious. The family wasn't close to the family, and he was such a beautiful old soul. And we had prayer groups going around the world praying for him, and the doctors had sent him home to die, wrote him off, and said, you know, that's it. To make a long story short, all our prayers, they were heard and they were answered, and he went into remission, and he's written up today on a plaque in Miami Children's Hospital. And it's kind of like, guys, pack your bag, you're going on a guilt trip, because he came up to me and he said, Michelle, we were very close, like brother and sister, he said, would you do it for me? And I said, you know, I just got a bad feeling about getting in the car. And he goes, come on, you love to go shopping. It's just a few blocks down the road. So I jumped in the car, and one of my guardian angels decided to jump in, literally, with me, and this voice of thunder comes out, a masculine voice, because I don't get in the backseat because I get car sick. And my other cousin, his sister was driving, and Stevie, Joey, Sherry, we're in the back. There's 5 of us. And I said, stop the car. And it was like this masculine voice, stop the car. Who wants to trade places with me? And I didn't even really realize what I was doing on a fully conscious level. And Stevie said, I'll trade places with you. And so he jumped up where I was sitting, shotgun. And I jumped in the back next to my cousin Joey, and Sherry was in the to the driver's side. And a long story short, we're going down Highway 40 in Daytona, right there with Volusia County. And I look up and I see a dog run out in front of the street. And I knew right then and there that that was it. And sure enough, my cousin tried to swerve off to the right to miss the dog, but there was a group of people working in the fields. So then she swerved off to the left, which was an oncoming van. And we had a head-on collision at 45 miles an hour. Stevie died where I was sitting. He traded lives with me that day. He gave me an opportunity to stay here on Earth and serve humanity and do the work that I do. And that's very powerful. And Joey, forgive me if I get a bit emotional, he passed.
We're getting emotional too.
I know, forgive me. he passed on the impact, a blow to his skull. And we didn't have our seatbelts on. And I was facing, kind of leaning in because we were looking at photos together. And I don't remember, they said that, you know, I was screaming because my back was broken. They didn't even know what everything was wrong with me. But a long story short, I died that day. And yeah. I was clinically pronounced dead. And I died many times where they kept saying I wouldn't make it. And when I died, I knew I was dying. And I have to tell you, it was the most peaceful, tranquil. Words could not even in any language articulate that experience. It was one of the hardest chapters in any of my books to write. Also a touchy subject because of the family.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I found myself above the scene of the accident, I knew I was physically dead. And I was just kind of astonished that there wasn't all those attachments that we have here when we're, you know, living our life. Like, you, the clarity is so profound, you're just like, it's surreal that no words can say it. So, I mean, I literally was watching the scene of the accident kind of detached emotionally is what I'm saying, and then realizing, wait a minute, I'm dead, but I'm not dead, and looking at myself, you know. And then, of course, I felt this warmth of light and pulled to it. So after listening to the paramedics and seeing the scene, which was horrific, and I knew already that Joey had passed and Stevie had passed. And so I went towards this light. Imagine kind of going into the sun. It's so bright, even with your spirit eyes. It was a fragment of the Godhead. And I looked to my right, and I looked, and I could see my guardian angels. I could see my family, like, go back, go back. And I was 18, you know. And 18, you think you know everything. You know absolutely nothing. And I had been suppressing my gift to a certain extent. And Spirit said, you have to go back. And I said, oh, no. I know the rules. Free will. You have to let me pass. And everything was explained to me as far as, because I was very upset. I wanted to know why Joey was taken. And the Godhead said, did you ever think that I gave you exactly what you guys wanted? You had prayer groups going all over the world. You had so much beyond faith, you know, a conviction, what I call a knowing, a certainty, that I answered your prayers to show you that prayers are heard and miracles occur. And he was in remission, you know, fully in remission for both types of leukemia. But God said, did you ever think that he's an old soul and that he served his purpose, but he extended his life a little bit longer to bring the family back together as a family unit? But in his crossing over in this accident, which he never even knew what hit him, he died on impact.
Right.
They said, you know, Spirit said to me, did you ever think that also if he had stayed any longer that the leukemia would have come back and he would have suffered, and would you want that for him? And I said, of course, absolutely not. He had suffered so much and he was such a champ about it. And so they said, see, he taught you the lesson of the power of prayer, the miracle, bringing the family back together and bringing the family, more importantly, back to God. And now he's in the heavens where he is long overdue and in healing, not suffering, but has fulfilled his contract and then some. And how can you argue that?
So definitely.
I remember going, wow, okay. But then I remember feeling in one sense, not guilt, but such a responsibility that Stevie decided of his own free will, and God allowed it for him to just so graciously step out of life so I could still be here because of my mission statement. It was so selfless.
Yeah.
So when I went over, not only was I aware of the Godhead and the elders and my family by blood and spirit and, you know, all the support around me, but they showed me my short 18 years. And I said, you see, look how horrible that is. I love a good debate. I said, you see, God, look, that planet, that life. And so they said, oh, we have a difficult one here, you know, because God does honor our free will even on the other side. So then they showed me my future. And I said, I don't believe that one person could possibly make that much of a difference. You must have the wrong person, the wrong soul. I'm just a young girl. Look at me. My body's all handicapped and shattered. And, you know, and God said, you choose of your own free will. Let me worry about the miracle. Let me perform the miracle. You know, you must go back. And then basically looking at all the information, before I could even complete a question within our consciousness, our spirit, it was answered with seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, tasting, knowing with such clarity that there's no lack of communication in the spirit world, that's for sure. And I have to be honest with you guys, I put up a good debate. I really didn't want to come back after you cross over and you experience heaven. But what I take from that experience is that when I came back, God promised and kept God's promises to me, and miracles occurred after miracles. They told me I wouldn't have children. I have two grown children. They told me my arm. They told me I'd be handy. Oh, horrible things. And they had done surgeries and, you know, just to make my point, my face was smashed in. My nose was broken. My head was glass sewed up. My lungs caved in, my heart, internal bleeding, my back was broke, my right arm was shattered, my left ankle was shattered. The only thing I could move was my left hand. And I was in a coma, and I was in ICU for weeks, and they said whenever I would wake up, I would talk about my near-death experience in heaven and the angels and, you know, what I had to do, and they thought it was the morphine. And a long story short, what I got out of that, it just amazes me of the unconditional love and the grace and the wisdom that God. I was so disobedient, and even in not listening to my natural born gift, that my life was still spared, but someone else's life was sacrificed. Joey just stayed longer to help us, and then he went to the spirit world where he has been, and he comes to me from time to time. But after seeing, they had to show me my future three times, and I said, I just can't go over all the way and cross over now because I feel it's so selfish, and, you know, I just couldn't do it in good conscience. And God's like, you chose this contract. You agreed to this. You know, you're here to serve humanity, and you can help so many people. And they just showed me again and again. And so I finally said, all right, I'll go back, but I don't know what you're going to do, God, because you're going to have to find me a new body. And God said, "For the let me worry about the miracle." And I said, but I can't take that pain. It's, you know, and it puts you in a coma. That's just a physical defense mechanism when the body's so, you know, so much trauma to it that you can't deal with that. And first of all, you know, that I couldn't breathe on my own. I couldn't do anything. So a long story short, I came back, and I came back with the conscious memory of everything, of my mission statement, of the heavens, of the angels, of everything. God let me come back with that clarity consciously, and that's such a gift. So that's what I take out of that near-death experience. People go, oh, were you more gifted after your near-death experience? I will say I was more enlightened, and I knew for certain what my mission statement was and my plan, and I told God this, a portion of the Godhead and spirit will say, because it's not just a man, right? And with a beard, wearing a long robe, playing a harp. It's so much more than that. And to try to explain that, again, in my first book, this was the hardest chapter. I just never felt like I gave enough glory and enough, you know, detail or wisdom or insight to that. You have to experience, I suppose, on some level. So I made a promise to myself and to God and to fulfill my contract. And I turned around and I said, all right. And I remember it was like a crash landing. And I remember, and I couldn't breathe. And paramedics going, she's back, we have her. And then that was it. I went into a coma for like weeks. And a long story short, I beat all the odds. Everything the doctors told me, it was the opposite. And I could even really break you guys' hearts and tell you that I was on my own since I've been 13 and working and being a good girl, you know. And I didn't have anywhere to go. They wanted to transfer me to another hospital here. And I said, no, I know I'm going to be fine. So, you know, I just really believed these miracles would occur for me, not only physically, but that I told God I wanted to hurry up and come down here and do everything that God showed me so I could come back home.